it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day? Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to the Laker Film Room Podcast. I'm Pete, joined by Darius and Mike. And the Lakers lost their eighth straight to the Denver Nuggets on Saturday, 124-114, in a game that looks suspiciously like a lot of the other games that they played against them. I thought that first half was probably the best half of the eight that we've played, and I think that there's some things to learn from and build off of in that, but Michael Porter Jr. became the first player in NBA history to make 10-plus shots, make all of them while taking at least five threes. Jokic was incredible, as he always is. Jamal Murray was a game-time decision, and people didn't think he was going to play. It looked like he was going to be out for a little bit, but he rubbed a little dirt on it and played through it. I appreciate that in this day and age, and was remarkable down the stretch. Lakers tried to counter him with Cam Reddish to close the game, and that did not go so well. So, D, that was a game, again, we've seen a lot of those between those two teams where it's kind of close toward the end, and then Denver, you know, leverages their advantages. They get to what they want to. Lakers have not solved the Denver riddle. So what do you see in that game on Saturday night?
Well, I think you laid out a lot of it. A very familiar loss. And I wrote that for Lakers.com. Like, I didn't want to pull out a Groundhog Day reference, but that's what it sort of felt like. The Lakers reliving the same game over and over again. It even featured a Sambor shuffle, Jokic heave at the end of a shot clock to sort of that wasn't the cherry on the sundae, but it was a part of the, like, that's when the psychology of the game, I thought, started to kick in the most, was when all of the shots were falling again. The right corner three from Aaron Gordon, which he's a very good right corner three shooter, so I guess it shouldn't be a surprise that he makes that shot, but within the context of the way he was shooting outside shots previous to that, that shot going in was also a backbreaker. The general tenor and flow of the game, the Lakers by no means they lost the game, of course, but even when they were winning, it looked like they hadn't solved the Nuggets puzzle, particularly defensively. Jokic was scoring over Rui almost every time he got to play on an island against him. And when AD was there to help, maybe one stop to two baskets, like it's like one out of three or one out of four, where the Lakers really got the stop and the rebound on a play where it looked like, ah, that worked. To me, this looked much more like a game where it was the Lakers offense that was driving them toward success against a Nuggets team. The Lakers were shooting over 50% the entire game, and I don't have the box score up in front of me, but they might have finished shooting over 50%. And so
about 53, yeah.
This is what, to me, it's what sort of made the end of the game frustrating, in that they played a defensive player in Cam Reddish who was not making an impact defensively. And they did that trade-off for D'Angelo Russell. Now, D'Lo did not have his best game. He was 6 of 13.
At least the third quarter. He was good in the first half. I thought that was his best half against Denver, you know, maybe in the whole series. Like, he had a bad third quarter shift, but yeah.
Mike, I kicked that to you. I thought the Lakers, if the Lakers were going to win this game, they were going to win it on offense. And with their offense being the confidence booster, because defensively, Denver was gashing them in too many different ways. And so if the Lakers were going to win, they were going to win because they outscored the other team. But down the stretch, I don't think they played the lineup that was going to be able to outscore the Nuggets.
Yeah, I've got a couple of old Nintendo games on my laptop, and one of them that I'll play is RBI Baseball. And
great game.
There are, like, I play with the Minnesota Twins. Shout out to my home state. And there are a couple of pitches that I can throw against any lineup, including the AL All-Stars, the NL All-Stars. And whenever I get to them, it has to be early enough in the game before the pitcher's arm gets tired. But, like, I know I can get the strikeouts. And then even against the best pitchers like Nolan Ryan for Houston, like I know that they have to throw a strike over the middle at a certain point. I know when to time it. And that's like the Murray and the Jokic screen roll action and just whatever they're doing, the two-man action on offense, it's going to work every time against the Lakers. It just has for so many consecutive games now. They don't have an answer for that. They can at least make it, you know, they can contest it better than some teams, thanks to Anthony Davis, but it's just something that works so well. What I thought broke them was, Pete had mentioned this earlier, Michael Porter Jr., not just hitting 10 of 10 shots, but hitting all five of his threes. And they, the Nuggets had somebody else in that spot. A lot of times it was Michael Porter Jr. Sometimes it was KCP. Sometimes it was Bruce Brown. They've had Jokic and Murray. Neither one of them has had a bad game against the Lakers. And they've had at least a third guy. And by the way, their actual third best player, or sometimes second best player, is Aaron Gordon, who I think might be the most underrated player in the NBA. And he's always doing his thing. He couldn't hit a shot, and then he hits the step back in the corner, the biggest one in crunch time. So they just have the Lakers' number. And in terms of like what they're supposed to do against them personnel wise, well, the Lakers got battered on the glass 47-31. And that's becoming something that's happening more often than not, especially since Christian Wood went down and Jackson Hayes is playing 8 minutes and 53 seconds. And of the Lakers, eight guys who played, or I guess it was nine, if you include those 9 minutes, how many of those players, I may have mentioned this on the last pod, are better defensively than offensively? And just so then that plays into what Darius said. Well, if you're going to play guys that are better on offense than defense, then you have to score at a certain clip that they were in the first half. And then you have to sustain that in crunch time. And in crunch time, they try to go back to a hybrid look. So Pete, I don't know if it's what's telling about this going forward. I don't know that this matchup is going to change in the Lakers' favor, even though I think they could win a game or two. But to beat that team four times with what the matchups are, I think would be highly unlikely. I don't think that's the case for many other teams in the West, but that's this Denver matchup is just, you know, because of Jokic just, specifically, is a very difficult one.
I agree with that. That's likely how it would go. I would like to see us not try the same thing though over and over. Like, it was a very different Denver team, obviously, in 2020. But when we actually beat them in a playoff series, we had a too big look. Like, we don't even have the option this year of going to two bigs, with the exception of the AD Christian Wood type of groups, right? But when we actually beat them, it was Dwight. It was AD and Dwight, and it was two guys that they're not three-point shooters, right? AD was taking more at that point, but the ability to deal with them physically, like, if you want to be able to have a defensive group that works against them, those are the types of groups that you have to have a certain amount of collective size. Like, this is true of any superstar really in the history of the game, guys, is that the really, really top guys, the idea of guarding them with one guy, you try that, that's just not going to work. And the first two buckets of the game, D, right? He had Rui on an island. I'm like, are we not going to send Rui any help? Is this going to be a one-on-one thing?
Even guarding a guy with two guys isn't necessarily effective. It's like a team-wide scheme. And so there was a great conversation that they got. LeBron was mic'd up. He was mic'd up because it was the 40,000 point game, basically. And like, we've talked about this whole game without even mentioning that LeBron crossed that threshold, which was really cool. And I really love the video that the Lakers showed during the break. You can find that stuff online. LeBron and AD were talking because they were switching a fair amount, 3 through 5. It's just that there weren't a ton of actions that involved Jokic that were 3 through 5. So Rui was on Jokic a fair amount. But LeBron and AD got crossed up a couple of times where AD ended up on Michael Porter Jr. And there was this great clip that they showed on ABC, and LeBron was basically explaining to AD, like, you can't help there. That's not your help responsibility. You can't leave MPJ out there. Like, it'll be me who has to then come over and try to disrupt and try to help. And so stuff like that was going on too, but it's a whole team-wide thing. It's not just like, oh, AD's the helper, you're the designated helper, and you're the only one.
We knew that in the offseason, though, that the Lakers, here's the resources they devoted to back up big, two vet min contracts to Christian Wood and Jackson Hayes. So that wasn't, to me, going to be a viable part of how they could play Denver this whole season.
So I still think when we played them last time and in a very similar game on, and it's always on like a special night, right? So the last time we played them was on Kobe's statue, and Hayes played alongside AD a decent amount in that game and was very good. We didn't see that look once. Again, there are, if you look at the top teams in the league, the majority of them have a too big look. I'm not saying it's the solution to everything, just like I don't think that starting Rui is the solution to everything. They're just better than starting Cam or starting Prince as they were, right? And so, but that athletic type of size, because Jokic is not just that great player, D, he's a 280-pound guy that you, yeah. That is, it's like saying, hey, if you've got a great point guard, say guarding Ja Morant, you've got to devote more resources toward the perimeter as a result of him, or a Steph Curry type, right? Like you have to, that's where the superstardom is happening, is out on the perimeter in those instances. In this instance, it's a guy that can legit back down even your best player all the way under the rim and just lay it in softly over him. And so having that combined kind of force, right? Like Rui is the guy that approximates that the most of the guys that do play. And he was functioning as our second big. And it was funny, D, because in that first quarter, I was like, I think they've scored all but 3 points on Rui. They had like 17 points at one point, and I think 14 of them were on Rui. And we were up 9. It was 26-17, because part of it is Rui can sort of, he can win some battles here and there. And on the other end, he's giving you a 9-point quarter because Jamal Murray has to guard him and he can't. And so that to me is like the Reddish substitution. Let's take a break here. When we come back, I'd love to talk about the end of that game, because that is the Groundhog Day sort of scenario that we've seen with this Lakers team. And so that last, you know, 7-8 minutes of that game, I want to hear your thoughts on that.
Eating better is easy with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You'll have over 35 different options to choose from every week, including Calorie Smart, Protein Plus, and Keto. Also, there are more than 60 add-ons to help you stay fueled. What are you waiting for? They are ready to heat and eat, so there's no prepping, cooking, or cleanup needed. It's also flexible for your schedule. Get as much or as little as you need by choosing your meals every week. Plus, you can pause or reschedule your deliveries anytime. Factor is the perfect solution if you're looking for fast, premium options with no cooking required. Head to factormeals.com/LakerFilm50 and use code LakerFilm50 to get 50% off. That's code LakerFilm50 at factormeals.com/LakerFilm50.
Yeah, so one quick point about that, the two big group two, Pete. It's harder now because of Wood's injury, especially, of course, but it's not impossible. So I just want to make sure that we understand that if you, and there's a prioritization that needs to happen in terms of mindset around this is important to us. That just means that you bring in Hayes earlier and you do it at the expense of one of the wings.
And we saw a lineup shift. It's funny because Denver is the team that I think forces you to go biggest, that needs the two big lineup the most because of Jokic. But we saw they extended Rui's shift, which was, I think in most games, I think that is the solution. It's just against them, they're still a little too big.
I would love for the end of AD's long shifts in the first quarter to involve a second big. Now, when Wood was healthy, it was Wood that was playing those minutes. But now that Wood is not healthy and he is unavailable, I would like to see Hayes fill that same role. And you just give Hayes more than 10 minutes a game. Like, you extend his shift and he's going to get a rest because he's going to wrap around the first quarter break and play into the second quarter in order to start that quarter with LeBron as sort of the lone big. I have other ideas about that too, but that's another conversation for another day. In terms of the end of the game stuff, Pete, the thing that Denver is so good at, with Murray especially, is that Murray is an above average player at so many things offensively that they leverage his ability to do all of these different things within the half court while using Jokic as this trigger man for all of their actions. And Mike has talked about this a bunch, but Jokic's effectiveness and the gravity that he has as both a scorer and a passer always means that like every other player on the court is getting like 5, 10, 15% less attention than what they would normally get because he's such a fantastic hub of offense for them. But the thing that they can do with Murray effectively is they can run him off wide pin downs. They can run him off of then like wide pin down in into a handoff action. And then they can just run straight up pick and roll actions with him. And so one of their pet actions is like this wide pin down for him that then turns into a dribble handoff, which then can then flow into a second pick and roll coming back and reusing the screen. And the second guy in that action is Jokic. And so it's almost impossible to say we're going to guard this effectively without either diverting resources from Jokic or literally saying we're going to throw so much at Murray that you're compromising guys from other spots on the court. And so, Mike, Murray had 9 assists or 11 assists. It's just like he was excellent as a passer as well, because when the other resources did get devoted to him, he's just making the right read within the context of the very organized and super sophisticated Denver offense. And so when we talk about that, then in relation to Cam, Cam is not Deion Sanders. He's not like this lockdown, shutdown, like I'm the best perimeter defender there is, and I can just take all of this stuff away. And so to me, that decision of saying we're going to lean into defense here against actions that are very difficult to defend, it seemed like diminishing returns and a decision that in the end left the Lakers shorthanded in other parts of the game where they could have been a little bit more competitive, but weren't.
Yeah, look, it's tough to argue that point, especially the points of emphasis that you made on it. I think that going into a game and you're making a game plan, you're looking at what happened against Denver in these previous times, and especially if you're watching the playoff games and you're thinking, Russell is particularly susceptible against some of these actions late against this team, especially once they really start hamming the Jamal Murray and the Jokic action. And I get that. And so Cam Reddish has had success in limiting some guards, and he is your best point of attack guy on the roster, healthy right now. We can make a different argument about Max, and I think that veers a little bit more towards the smaller guards, as Pete has said a lot. But so I get that from a concept standpoint. But at the same time, you know, during the game, I think I might have texted you guys at one point, Russell's doing better in this matchup than he was doing. And I think one of you may have responded, well, it does help without Bruce Brown or without KCP, like those guys that are really going to get up into him and pressure him. And to some extent, but bottom line is Russell's playing better. He just is. And he was pretty good in that game. He was 6 for 13. He had 17 points. He was +2. So I get that. And I think at the end of the day, yeah, I probably would have stuck with that. But what I think about, and we don't talk about a lot about this Denver team, is that defensively, they have a couple of holes, but against the Lakers specifically, they have some really good matchups. And I mentioned Aaron Gordon earlier. He is one of the only guys in the league that is both strong and quick enough to at least hang with LeBron in certain actions. And then you have Jokic camped out in the lane, taking up a lot of space. So a lot of what LeBron and AD want to do late in games is kind of get downhill and get to the rim. And Denver takes a lot of that away. Whereas, remember the shot that LeBron in Game 4 ended up being like a fadeaway toward on the baseline away from the basket? Like, that's not, you know, what he's typically going to get against a lot of teams. And in this case, once the Nuggets they're getting great shots in the one end, and then the Lakers are not as much, especially if AD's jumper is not going down, which we had talked about before the game, the need for him to be able to drain that. And it hasn't been, he had a great stretch this year where he was in rhythm with it, and it hasn't been there since the All-Star break. So that just to me, that maybe you could counter with, well, yeah, that's part of the reason why maybe if Russell's on the court instead of Reddish, you have another option and you can get to something else. But I just think that if Denver keeps out executing the Lakers in crunch time, not just on the offensive end, but on the defensive end, where the Lakers aren't able to get the same shots that they were getting earlier in the game, that just means that they're better. And it's not that simple, but I just think that we forget sometimes what they're able to do and how they're able to control what the Lakers do offensively.
That out executing us down the stretch is something that always stands out to me when we play them. The level of there was a three by Justin Holiday who closed that game, and he was a guy that he's their most similar player to KCP in terms of style. And so with him out, he closed instead of Christian Brown. And there was a play where it was Cam guarding Reddit, or it was Cam guarding Jokic on the elbow, which is one of the things that that sounds ridiculous, right? Like, why would you have him guarding him there? It is something that there's AD helping behind, right? Who's guarding Gordon, quote unquote, but not really. He's helping off in a zone type of principle. And so when AD steps into the paint to go impact that play, Gordon just dives right to the basket. And Austin checks him, as he should, but think about that's a math problem at that point, right? It's Jokic and Gordon versus Cam on the ball, AD helping out, and then Austin checking the cutter on that. And then it's a wide open skip pass to Holiday. And so it's like, oh, Austin, you're over helping. It's, well, if he doesn't do that, it's a lob to Gordon. And so LeBron had a great quote in postgame about, like, there really isn't an answer to this kind of guy. And that's why, to me, D, it goes back to the, like, what can you be? What is the type of team that you have? What was disheartening for me, what was disheartening from the D'Lo perspective to me was that there hasn't been any point this season, this regular season of this team, where the Lakers have been a better team without D'Lo. He hasn't even been like close to the fifth guy in terms of the best player. I think he's been our third best player this season. And so that he's still at that point where he's getting benched and it's for a guy like Cam, right? To me, if, because Mike brings up a good point about how D'Lo gets targeted by them defensively, right? Now, I would argue that Cam got targeted too, frankly, that he did very little to stop him. But that, so he was targeted defensively. But on the offensive end, like, we couldn't score either, right? And that if AD's jumper is not falling. And so I think I saw a stat where I think we're like 2-9 in the clutch in these games where D'Lo hasn't finished the game. This was something that was a lot more frequent during earlier parts of the season, but I just don't know how you could watch this year's team for as long as you have and be like, ah, D'Lo's not the guy that, and instead it's going to be Cam, who's frankly like fighting for his spot in the league. You know what I mean? It's not like you're replacing him with the guy that even Dinwiddie, I would understand a little bit more because he brings some of the defensive tools. He's the guy kind of in the middle, right? Of D'Lo and Cam. If you're looking for a little bit of defense, but can also hit a shot, like even that one would be more understandable to me. But we've spent so much of this season giving huge minutes to guys on like vet min and biannual exception level contracts over players that, even if they're not the same archetype, are just better players. Like, D'Lo's a better player than Cam, D.
Yes. Yes, he is. And I wanted to explode a second ago when you were saying that D'Lo gets targeted. And this isn't me being upset at the point. It's the fact that Denver's entire offense is targeting right. everyone all of the right. time. The fact that D'Lo would show up in that targeting earlier during the season or last year during the playoffs was a function of how organized their offense is. So it's not like they're saying every single possession, you know who we're going to pick on this game. We're going to pick on D'Angelo Russell. It's the fact that D'Lo's deficiencies defensively were showing up within the context of everything that Denver's doing. This wasn't a, oh, well, we're playing a switch everything team, and now we're going to go point out the guy that we want to target and isolate, and we're going to make sure that guy is involved in defending the ball. Like, no, that's not what happens. It's more this blender effect where after a while, your ability to stay connected while being as attentive as you need to be in all the areas that you need to be attentive against this Nuggets team, it shows up in you being a step and a half away from a three-point shooter or like not connected on a backdoor cut and a guy gets a layup. It's targeting, but it's not targeting in the way that we normally think about it. And this goes back to my point about Cam, is that he is a fine player. He's fine. I'm not here to diminish him at all. It's just that he was not effective in the thing that you were asking him to do. And I would rather go down with the player who is the better overall talent. And if that player is not effective, then that's a means to then criticize that player who makes $18 million And so it's just like that player is just like, hey, we need you to play better. If Cam Reddish doesn't play better, it's just like, well, guess what? You make $2 million a year. The fact that we were depending on you to be better than $2 million, that's like, that's an evaluation issue as well. That it's just, to me, not giving yourself the best chance to win.
Over and over. Now,
giving yourself the best chance does not guarantee that you win. And we were having this discussion after the game a little bit where me and Pete are sort of like, hey, like, oh man, I'd love to see this. I'd love to see that. And they're these small little tweaks. They're small little things, but those things don't mean that you're going to win the game. The wraparound minutes I was talking about with Jackson Hayes, does that mean the Lakers beat the Nuggets? Like,
part of it's just for my sanity's sake, I want to see us try the thing that worked when we beat them. And then it's like, oh, we lost 8 times in a row. Can we try the thing that where we beat them? Just try to do the same thing, you know?
So let's go to break here. We can hit a couple more points about the Nuggets, but
yeah, let's move on.
The grind of the Western Conference is on, and the Lakers have another important game tonight.
Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
So Mike, there's no rest for the weary out here. And we are always standings watching. Every time Pete's not on a pod, I feel like our conversations are almost about how we've bookmarked the standings page and how we're always looking about like, oh, game and a half a game, one game up, 2 games back, right? And so, and there's a lot of that going on.
Yeah, it wasn't a bad weekend, right? We actually moved up in the standings in some respects.
Teams finally started to lose some in the Western Conference, at least in the end of where the Lakers are at, yeah.
But tonight, the Lakers have another important basketball game. They play the Thunder, who had a very good win last night against the Phoenix Suns. And so they come in to play the Lakers on the second night of a back-to-back, but are the number one seed in the conference right now. But on the inverse of that, the Lakers have had a fair amount of success against this team this season. And so going into another important basketball game tonight, Mike, how are you looking at this matchup? How are you looking at where the team's at? Just talk to me about Monday night.
My typical deal here is that OKC is coming off a tough win against Phoenix last night and a late arrival and all that. The flip side of that would be that their average age is like 23. And so they're probably all fine from a physical standpoint. But to bring the conversation about Denver into this, not just the OKC game, but the next stretch here, which is Sacramento, Milwaukee, Minnesota, and then at Sacramento. All of those teams are good, but none of them have the thing that just breaks the Lakers, which is what Denver has. And that, of course, starts with Jokic and then all the other things that dovetail off of that. And so I think that the Lakers can play how they played against Denver and have better results against these other teams. And that starts with OKC, whom the Lakers have already beaten twice, in part because of why Phoenix was able to get back into the game. OKC was up 20 in the third quarter. Phoenix cut it all the way down to like 1 or 2. And then OKC kind of closed it out with some just excellent execution. They're such a fun team to watch. They're going to be such a problem for so many years. But Nurkic was just giving them absolute fits at the rim. And by the way, he just did that to the Lakers. What was that? I guess about a week ago. And so they're small, right? And this is that's the kind of thing where not just Anthony Davis, but LeBron, to me specifically, is a guy. If you don't have somebody big enough, like an Aaron Gordon type, or somebody that's just really going to impact the rim defensively, which, by the way, the Bucks do some. So we'll save that, though, until Friday's matchup. That, to me, is where just what the Lakers have normally, forget all of picking the exact right lineups, which has not been great this year, but they at least, just based on the personnel, have somewhat of an advantage in this game that they certainly didn't have against the Denver Nuggets. And that would be where my focus would be for this Monday matchup, is that, you know, how do the Lakers make sure that they're getting to those actions where they can exploit it And, you know, how do they make sure they're not going to get killed on the offensive glass again? Well, that's not something that the Thunder do a ton either. So it's just the matchup itself. Even if OKC is a better team in terms of night-to-night production in the NBA, the Lakers have some advantages in this.
I think you're spot on with that. And I think that in terms of amongst the better teams, that's probably the biggest swing you can go in terms of strength of one team to the next. I think Denver is the strongest team in the, of the contenders, whereas in terms of physical strength, whereas OKC is probably at the lowest end of that spectrum. That's part of the downside of everybody being 23, Mike. They don't have their grown man strength quite yet. And so, yeah, exploiting that is going to be super important with via LeBron and AD. I also think that this will be a big test of Rui defensively. They are a team that I could see foot speed being an issue in with the bigger groups. But I think Holmgren is going to be really at the center of what works and doesn't in this game. I think that, for one, there's getting him into foul trouble and sort of attacking him with strength around the rim. He's a guy that AD has, again, if you talk about that comparison in strength, there's no position where that is more obvious than at the five spot, right? Going from Jokic to Holmgren. And so AD goes from being disadvantaged in that respect to really being able to take advantage in that way. And so their team, Lakers, have beaten twice. That is something that, and two in a row, Mike, that worries me a little bit. But and we've also left Holmgren open a lot, and he hasn't shot well from three in the previous two matchups. If he starts making those, it could be a different game. But curious what you think on that.
Well, if I can tee Darius up on something, because you had sent me a clip of, or maybe it wasn't a clip, it was a summary of the AD didn't do his job again on offense again in crunch time against the Nuggets, like that type of thing, the critique that he was getting. And you know, then we point out, well, he also wasn't getting the basketball. And I just, going into this matchup against Chet, when the Lakers are not getting AD the basketball enough, or what is your just overall view of this type of thing, not just with how it would go against Chet, but like, and how would you treat it? How much would you spam it? What positions on the court do you want to get him in against a matchup like this? And how do you exploit that to peak effect against
OKC? I'm really glad you brought this up, Mike. D, we've kind of gone away from AD in the post. That's been something that really worked for a good 6-week stretch. And yeah, no, right. Kind of right. There was a really good stretch and they just stopped doing it.
Coming out of the All-Star break, I haven't looked at the numbers, but there has been a stylistic shift. AD is screening a bunch more. And when Mike talked about AD, he had that extended period where his jumper was really good. It's like that's when he was a real hub of the offense. The team was playing through him at the top of the key and in the post so much more. They have not been doing that lately. He's been much more of a pick and roll screener. And that does help the guards. And there's a reason why the guards' production has been good. Like, there's a reason to me why D'Lo is playing well, why Austin is playing well. Those guys typically need a screen to help them get open, and there's no better player to do that on this Lakers team for sure than for Anthony Davis to be the player who's setting that screen, and what that means for them and their ability to get downhill or get into their spaces as AD occupies defenders. My thing is, though, is when the Lakers were up there at the top of the league of assists, and they're still moving the ball well, and it started with AD in the post a lot, and him getting doubled or team shading in his direction, him making the right read, and then the ball pinging around the court as the defense then got into rotation. And against Holmgren especially, Chet is long and he has defensive range, but AD can power through him in a way that he actually doesn't power through a bunch of players, because that's not typically his
game. Not at the five spot. When he plays the four, that's part of the value you get from that. As you get a smaller player on him, you can get a little more of that.
Going back to the Lakers championship season, and when Pete, you were talking about like the too big look, one of the benefits of that, and Mike said, it's not the same Denver team, and it's not like that team had Jeremy Grant and not
Paul
Aaron
Millsap,
Gordon.
But yeah.
Yeah, but that said, so many times, teams had to defend the Lakers center with their center, and they did not deploy their center on to AD. And so whether it was against Portland, and Portland started to play two big groups,
like, Whiteside,
in order to try to match up. Yeah, it was like Whiteside and Nurkic. And it's just like, okay, we'll happily take this, right? And so, but it was AD scoring over power forwards. And now that he plays center so much more, there's not a lot of power forward sized dudes who are defending him. Now, Chet's not a power forward size dude, but he is a power forward weighted player. He's, you know, 220, something like that. So AD can power through him. And Chet is going to do a good job at protecting the rim. LeBron has had issues finishing around and over Chet in ways that he doesn't when OKC goes to their bench groups. And it is those bench groups that I think that the Lakers have feasted on in terms of rim attacks that have led to them winning these games. But Pete, when you were talking about Chet shooting, I looked up the numbers. For the season, Chet is shooting 39.7% from three. He is a fantastic stretch big. Against the Lakers, he is shooting 18.8%.
On wide open looks. Three. I'm telling you, like, in you know, the types of looks it's that we like give up to guys were like, yeah, go ahead and shoot that. Yeah, these are wide open shots.
It's like 5.3 attempts a game, and he's making like one of them. And so this is an area where I do think the Lakers are sort of equipped to bother Chet in ways where it's just like using up all of his legs as he has to battle against AD, but the Lakers have to facilitate that by going to AD more. And I would like to see the offense pivot back more, Mike, to AD-centric, playing through him in the post, giving him trail opportunities so he's at the top of the key, and leveraging all that he brings offensively more, because 13 or 11 or 12 shot attempts, whatever he got against Portland or sorry, against Denver was not enough.
I think we go to AD in the post against teams that switch a little more often than other teams. And so we've played a couple of teams, whether it's Nurkic, Jokic, with guys that are, those are guys that you want to run ball screens against because they are drop pretty much exclusively, or, you know, Jokic can obviously show a little bit higher, but in terms of they're not switchy type of teams. And so I think that's part of the rationale. I don't agree with it. I think you should give AD the ball. There's like benefits in a whole bunch of ways. But I do think that this is a night, Mike, where we're likely to see that more often because they are more of a switch and swarm kind of team.
And I just want to say that Chet is one of the best rookies that we've had in recent NBA history.
Really good.
If you haven't gotten a chance to watch him a lot, he's tremendous. He competes hard. He's pretty good at everything. He just, AD is kind of one player that is kind of in the way that for as amazing as AD is defensively, it's like he just doesn't do a ton to Jokic. Mm-hmm. And as amazing as Chet is in many things, like AD is just one of the few humans on earth that is equipped, you know, to handle that in different ways. I don't know that the Lakers have that same way to handle Shai, Gilgeous-Alexander, and nor do many teams. And so that to me is, like, Shai's just super steady. He's getting 31 points every night. You know, he doesn't necessarily explode for 45. He's making sure that J-Dub gets a lot of touches, and he's just, it flows very well within OKC's system. And their offense is so, like, their five out is the way that I think everybody wants to play five out in a way, but just doesn't necessarily have their personnel. So he'll do a ton of pretty stuff tonight, and I'm curious what the Lakers have to offer him, you know, in the starting lineup with Rui and Austin and D'Lo, and not having kind of that point of attack, you know, defense in the same way is going to be interesting. And then where do they go? We just talked about last game, Cam Reddish ends up getting the call in crunch time. What is the plan to deal with Shai, and who are the defensive players that they're going to use? And how much does that take away from what the Lakers' better groups are? To me is a pretty key factor here.
I'm very interested to see who the Lakers deploy on Shai. Pete, who do you think,
gets
Austin, the initial matchup?
Austin, now, I don't want to even pretend like Austin can guard Shai, but I do think Austin's been playing better defensively lately. I think there's been an uptick on that end, and as he's been asked to guard better guys, he's done a better job. But yeah, this is, as Mike was saying, that I'm like, oh yeah, we got nobody for him in that starting lineup. So that to me is where you go to a certain scheme and where you go to a certain level of like, we're willing to concede this shot, right? And so I think Shai's probably going to get as many pull-up 17-footers as he'd like. And the idea is to outscore him on the other end, you know?
I'm actually interested in whether or not the Lakers play someone bigger on him. Now, this would require LeBron to take a prime defensive matchup. So, like, in a normal alignment, AD is on Chet, and LeBron would probably defend Dort. So LeBron would probably be on Dort, and Rui would be on J-Dub. And then the guards would play the guards. And in this case, Austin on Shai makes the most sense. I'm interested in lineups in the defensive deployment where LeBron is on J-Dub and Rui is on Shai and the Lakers switch more ball screens that involve Chet in order to also take away like the pick and pop where you're doing less of that. Now that then puts AD on Shai and there's a cat and mouse and chess game that exists there. That's probably more late game offense than early game offense. But I'm interested in what that looks like, Pete, in a game where the player that best matches up with all of those types of dudes is on the bench wearing, you know, his fantastic outfits that he wears every single game, which is Jared Vanderbilt. Because Vando is the answer in this equation, but they don't have him.
Well, Shai's just rocking Rui side to side, though, you know, until and then going right by.
We don't have anybody for Shai.
Yeah.
Cam's got the best shot, but I mean,
No, it's more of a team defense and just hope he hits a little bit fewer of his jumpers. But he's going to get 31.
He is.
You know, it's going to happen. Yeah.
We got to wrap up here, fellas. We will be back tomorrow to discuss how it went. But until then, you've been listening to the Laker Film Room Podcast. We'll catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn. He's double teamed. Just pass out of front. Broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
And Magic got it. Magic fires. It's good. The Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound of Lowry. 3 seconds left. Van Exel the winner. It's on the way.
Kobe Bryant. 48 points. 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block. An NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
in Boston. Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Pretty pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one.
Miss it.
Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to 5. Bryant. Yes. And that was a little tap to Albert Gentry.
Add insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic. Trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis. 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good. Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers. James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.
Spring is in the air at Littleton Coin Company, and we want to help you brighten your collection. Visit us at littletoncoin.com all month long to enjoy 15% off your purchase. With a wide selection of coins, paper money, supplies, and more, Littleton Coin Company has something for every collector's taste. Use promo code SPRING at littletoncoin.com for 15% off your purchase all month long. Restrictions apply. Littleton Coin Company, serving collectors since 1945.